The first reading is from the letter of John, chapter 4, verses 7 to 21. Scholars are still not entirely sure who the author of the letter of John was, but his message seems clear that the mark and the test of Christian is love for others. John recognizes and proclaims that the source of our love is in the love that comes from God. Love originates in God, and we express it by the way we treat others. If we fail to love our brothers and sisters, we cannot claim to love God. God is love. Dear friends, let us love one another because love is from God. And everyone who loves has been fathered by God and knows God. The person who does not love does not know God, because God is love. By this, the love of God is revealed in us, that God has sent his one and only Son into the world so that we may live through him. In this is love. Not that we have loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son to be the atoning sacrifice for our sins. Dear friends, if God so loved us, then we also ought to love one another. No one has seen God at any time. If we love one another, God resides in us, and his love is perfected in us. By this, we know that we reside in God and he in us, in that he has given us of his Spirit, and we have seen and testify that Father has sent his Son to be the Savior of the world. If anyone confesses that Jesus is the Son of God, God resides in him and he in God. And we have come to know and to believe the love that God has in us. God is love, and the one who resides in love resides in God, and God resides in him. By this, love is perfected with us, so that we may have confidence in the day of judgment, because just as Jesus is, so also are we in this world. There is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out our fears, because fear has to do with punishment. The one who fears punishment has not been perfected in love. We love because he loved us first. Those who say, "I love God," and hate their brothers or sisters are liars. For those who do not love a brother or sister whom they have seen cannot love God whom they have not seen. This commandment we have from him is this: those who love God must love their brothers and sisters also. That ends the first reading. The second reading is from Paul's letters to Romans, chapter 8, verses 14 to 17. Paul makes a family connection in his letter to Romans, declaring that we are all children of God, and therefore heirs of God and joint heirs of Christ. All who are led by the Spirit of God are the sons of God. For you did not receive the spirit of slavery, leading again to fear, but you received the spirit of adoption, by whom we cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit himself bears witness to our spirit that we are God's children. And if children, then heirs, namely heirs of God and also fellow heirs with Christ. If we need, we suffer with him, so we may also be glorified with him. That ends the second reading.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Long before European settlers spread into the area around the southern tip of Africa, a nation of black Africans called the lived there. I practiced it. There's a click at the beginning and then H-O-S-A. I won't try it a third time. The settlers who arrived from Europe, for the most part, considered the folk already there to be savages, even though they had a highly developed social structure based on traditional values, which had evolved over thousands of years. It was and is called Ubuntu. It's time for a definition. It's a South African philosophy or belief that holds as its central tenet that a person is a person through other persons, that we are meant to live in caring community, that my well-being is tied to your well-being and your well-being to mine, that both individuals and whole communities thrive best when we care for each other. Or as John says, we must love each other. Ubuntu. Ubuntu, a traditional way of being with others, has been practiced by many African communities to promote respect for humanity, dignity of others, collective solidarity, commitment to integrity, social justice, equality, and the sanctity of every human being. I can be fully happy when you are fully happy. I can be fully a person when you are fully a person. It is the essence of being human. It speaks of the fact that my humanity is caught up and inextricably bound up in yours. I am a human because I belong. It speaks about wholeness. It speaks about compassion. A person with Ubuntu is welcoming, hospitable, warm, and generous, willing to share. Such people are open and available to others, willing to be vulnerable, affirming of others, do not feel threatened that others are able and good, for they have a proper self-assurance that comes from knowing that they belong in a greater whole. They know that they are diminished when others are diminished, diminished when others are oppressed, diminished when others are treated as if they were less than who they are. The quality of Ubuntu gives people resilience, enabling them to survive and emerge still human, despite all efforts to dehumanize them. You know when Ubuntu is there, and it's obvious when it's absent. It has to do with what it means to be truly human, to know that you are bound up with others in the bundle of life. Now, two of the best models of Ubuntu are Nelson Mandela and Bishop Desmond Tutu. The miracle is that they were able to maintain this way of being even through the apartheid years and inspire and provide models for the people of South Africa. Mahatma Gandhi would be another example. He was once asked what he thought of Western civilization, and he said, "I think it would be a good idea." Another example of Ubuntu are the Gogos of South Africa. That is the grandmothers who have stepped up to care for their grandchildren as well as the children from other families. Could someone get me a glass of water? Yes, please, thank you. The Gogos who care for the grandchildren as well as the children from other families whose lives have been affected by the scourge of AIDS. In this, they are supported by grandmothers in this country as well. And there are Gogos here. Gogo is the African word for grandmother. And we have Gogos in Canada. There's one here, at least one here today, Barb Warren. There were about 8 of them, I think, on our trip, who wanted to see the work that the money they were raising here was doing in South Africa. And they're lovely, gracious, thoughtful women that they were so excited to be able to be doing that, looking at what was happening. They, as well as raising money to send to the African grandmothers through the Stephen Lewis Foundation, they also wage an education campaign to try to persuade the Canadian government to allow the necessary drugs to fight HIV/AIDS to enter Africa as generic drugs. at a much lower cost. It's a bit of a hard go to get that one to be accepted by the government. The opposite of caring for the whole community, the opposite of Ubuntu, was demonstrated by the powerful white Afrikaner government who chose to control the black Africans in South Africa by setting by passing a set of very restrictive laws. Black South Africans were restricted in their movement, in the jobs available to them, in the education available, in the language of instruction. Suppose our children were at school one day. Oh, thank you, David. Our children were at school one day and suddenly someone came in and said, well, from now on, you're going to be educated in Czechoslovakian. Well, that's the kind of thing that happened in Africa. It wasn't Czechoslovakian, but we're going to use the Afrikaner language rather than the language that you have been learning in your own language. Other requirements, people had to always carry a pass with them and produce it to authorities on demand. There were limitations as to whom they could marry, whom they could date even, and where they could live. To our shame, when white government officials were developing this program of apartness in South Africa, they were looking around to see if there were other models that they could copy, and so they came to Canada to see what we were doing with our Aboriginal people and got the ideas of separate schools and reservations. You know, if we keep them out there, then they won't bother us and lower our standard of living or be a threat to us. They'll be happier in their own space. The roots of apartheid or separateness went back to the mid-1600s when Jan van Riesbeck planted a bitter almond hedge around his settlement in a half-moon shape. So the ocean is here, and he's got a half-moon shaped almond hedge around it. Now, the almond hedge is an impenetrable hedge. Sturdy, sturdy branches, all twisted and gnarled together. Impossible to get through. But if you did manage to break off even one branch, Van Riesbeck said, 3 years in chains in prison. Like, the roots of apartheid go very, very deep. Part of the hedge still stands today in the Kirstenbosch Gardens, a twisted, impenetrable entanglement of branches. And even though it no longer physically remains as a barrier, the symbolism remains in the hearts of many white South Africans, the desire to be able to keep white South Africa separate. I want to tell you briefly of some of the places where we saw Ubuntu at work. The Desmond Tutu HIV Foundation Youth Center. We arrived just at 2 p.m., just as school was getting out, and were swarmed by a group of laughing, jumping, energetic young teens who spent their after-school time learning to use computers, playing soccer, doing their homework, getting counseling, watching TV, getting health education, and testing and care for HIV/AIDS. And by doing some of those things, they were able to accumulate points. You know, imagine getting points for doing your homework, for going to the doctor. All right. And with those points, they were able then to get rewards, such as, if once I get another 50 points, someone's going to teach me to drive. We visited a recreational center in the Cape Flat townships, and the leader straight-faced asked us as we climbed out of our two vans, "What's your game?" And when he said that, I was taken aback a little bit. It was sort of as if someone was saying, "So why are you here?" And then he grinned and said, "Basketball or soccer?" Well, some of the guys in our group said, "Soccer." So in no time at all, the most chaotic soccer game ever played in the world was played on that field. and we lost. You know, most of us in the group were, 55 plus, shall we say? Yes, yeah. But it was great fun. And then after the soccer game, he said, okay, now let's go inside to the gym, basketball time. And the game was on between these mature, somewhat sedentary seniors and a horde of young teens. And as soon as we lost that game, the call, we were hooked. We were hooked. And we had a great time chatting with them and also chatting with all of the mothers and fathers and grandparents who had gathered around to view this game. On another day, we visited the Somme Delta wine estate, where the two white owners had made a decision several years ago to invite in a third partner, the workers. Think about that. Yeah. Let the workers be owners as well. And one of those Black African workers was our tour guide and talked proudly of the history of that winery. We visited the Regina Mundi Church in Soweto on a Thursday, on a day where 20 or more infants and young children had been brought for baptism. As the baptismal rite continued, we were quietly, and it was noisy, you know, crying babies, laughing babies, chatter going on, but the rite of baptism still being treated seriously. It was important that people be there. As the baptismal rite continued, we were quietly led to the altar, and the altar cloth was lifted to show how it had been broken in an attack by the military police during the apartheid years, a punishment to the congregation and clergy for harboring fugitives from one of the most repressive systems this world has ever known. Our guide then pointed up to the high ceiling, pockmarked with bullet holes, because the church had tried to be a place of refuge during apartheid. Ubuntu, Ubuntu. We climbed up a high wooden platform to see Kealista, a township of shanties with a population of 1.2 million. Those shanties stretched as far as we could see in every single direction, 360 degrees. Now, many of these people had been living elsewhere, closer to Johannesburg, but their homes had been destroyed and they had been ordered to move here. We met some of the both white and black leaders who had taken up the challenge to work with them. Ubuntu. The Diakonia Council of Churches demonstrated Ubuntu to us as well, working with women who had been raped. In fact, one of the things that they have done to raise awareness of the enormity of rape as an issue is that they have declared Thursdays are Black Thursdays. And so the members of the council encourage people to wear black on that day as a reminder and as a way of spreading the word, this has to stop. Who have been raped, and also supporting people who have been charged with offenses, whether justified or not. We visited some of the programs supported by the Stephen Lewis Foundation, such as pre-employment centers for older teens called Fit for Life, Fit for Work. And when we were there, these senior teens, each in turn got up and told us what their hopes and aspirations were. And here they were talking confidently and competently to a group of total strangers from far away. And it was a joy to see the potential leadership that was coming through this program. We saw church-sponsored maternity hospitals for mothers and infants infected with HIV/AIDS, a hospice for those dying with AIDS. And we saw some remnants of the worst of the apartheid period, Caspers, prison cells, pictures of 13-year-old Hector Peterson, whose photographic image of his death by gunfire during an uprising to protest the introduction of Afrikaans as the language of instruction, galvanized a nation. The picture was incredibly powerful. And speaking of pictures, I have pictures in the gathering place out there that I invite you to take a look at. There are pictures of animals, because that was a big part of what we saw, and pictures of people. There's a shanty image from the front page of the Globe and Mail. And there are highlights that my sister identified. She wasn't able to be at the reunion last Friday night, so she sent comments about the things that were highlights for her on that trip. And they are all listed on one of those posters. We visited the new Constitution Court in a building constructed with prison bricks, which once hid the world from the abuses of human rights. And we were told we are building our future with the bricks that once imprisoned us. We visited Nelson Mandela's modest four-room home just across the street from Desmond Tutu's home. And we were welcomed into South African homestays with hosts who were willing to answer even our most intrusive questions, and attended church services where two or three were gathered, and some where over 1,000 gathered. One last story. Our last Sunday, we attended a traditional African, Black African service at the Central Methodist Mission. We saw groups of women in special uniforms such as black skirt, red jacket, white bonnet, and collar. And an idea for the UCW, Marlene, so that people could know who you are and what you stand for. There you go. Try that one on. And then there were other people in other uniforms and in these white, lovely white bonnets as well. And the men dressed in black suits and looking very, very handsome, and also wearing black shoes that you could, I think you could see your image in, because they were so beautifully polished. And oh my, the music. The music. 1,000 people. Now, we tried to carry along with at least with a melody humming, because we didn't know any of the six languages that were being used in that service. But it was an incredible experience. At one point, one of the ministers invited those who wished to pray to come forward, and about 200 did. And as they gathered, each in their own tongue began to pray in a whisper, in a whisper, a whisper, a whisper, a whisper that got louder and louder and louder, but it was still a whisper. And all I could think of was that story in the book of Acts. You remember the disciples were huddled in an upper room. Their leader had been crucified. Where do they turn? What do they do now? Everything that he worked for is lost. And in the midst of that despair, there was the sound of a mighty wind, and it was the Holy Spirit coming into that place. That's what we experienced that Sunday morning. Another expression of Ubuntu, because the Spirit was with them. Is there hope in South Africa? Well, we saw many signs of the Spirit of God at work, and one of which was the music. Let's hear from the choir.